This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released August 27th, 2019. Episode 456.1, an interview with Schneider and Rahix of the Cardio Badge team. Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Hi, I'm Rahix, and I'm part of the firmware team for cardio.
I'm Schneider, I'm part of the team.
And I'm Alvaro, and I'm not part of the team. I'm just here for fun.
You're here as a co-host, yeah.
Yes.
So welcome to Card 10 team, cardio team. So Card 10 cardio, I keep looking at it, and it's spelled Card 10.
It is.
But it's cardio.
It is.
So why was it the domain name? Why was it Card
10? Well, 8 years ago, we made the Rocket, had a zero as an O in there. It was our first badge. And 4 years later, we did the radio badge with a one in there.
Oh, yeah.
So now we needed a name with a two in there. There were many different ideas, but in the end, cardio made it.
Binary.
It's
I
binary.
Get it. I get it. Yeah. I see what we're doing.
It will
here.
Be tricky the next time.
Because it'll have to be something like with L's, maybe.
Maybe.
Or double I.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So have you started on the next year's badge? Or is it 4 years from now?
I try to not think about that.
So you both worked on past years?
I did.
This is the first badge I worked on.
Okay.
How is it working with Schneider? Is it pretty rough?
It's great.
He's a taskmaster. He's just, do more firmware!
It's a great, and I think the whole team worked together really nicely.
Yeah. How big is the team?
That's a good question. It has been, you have people coming, going, but I think something like a dozen people
who
work on different parts of the whole project, right? It's not even only hardware or firmware. There's also a lot of outreach and mechanical design and logistics and
just like putting stuff into bags and handing out, right?
The bags.
Not counting that even. I think we've employed hundreds of people at camp.
Wow. Okay.
Over the days.
Okay, so this is just working up to camp.
Yeah, just working up to camp. I guess a dozen plus. Yes. And at camp, I think at some point, at a single instance, we had, I counted over 30 people working on different things at one point in time at our tents there.
Like, wow.
Yeah, that time was always full.
Packing up things, doing firmware, repairing hardware and stuff like that.
Well, let's go back. So when did this project start? Oh, wait.
Well,
actually, before that, what is it? So people don't know. It's not the card tent, it's the cardio badge. What is the cardio badge?
Well, the cardio badge is the badge of the Chaos Communication Camp 2019, where we are right now. It's the last day of camp. I think the closing ceremony will start soon. And it follows the tradition of the radio badge and the rocket badge to have something for all the attendees to play with. And we always strive to do something new or useful. And this time it was the cardio badge, and we started, well, thinking about doing a badge again like roughly a year ago, but it took basically half a year to come to a concrete idea of what we want to do. And it all formed around the fact that we had access to an ECG a chip which can record an ECG. Everything else evolved around the idea of doing an ECG in the end. So now here we are half a year later, and most people have something strapped around their wrist. And,
right, that's what I was getting towards too, is like it is wrist mountable.
I saw people around their neck.
That's true.
Yes.
Chokers, flexible. And many different.
We've got people having them around their legs, putting them on harnesses.
Mine was like, on my water bottle for a good part
of
the trip.
We imagined that people would put them at lots of different places, so it's not your regular, in quote marks, conference badge which you hang around your neck, but it is designed to be worn in lots of different places.
And then what are some of the features of the badge itself? Again, just high level, we'll get into all the details, but like, what is it meant to do?
Well, it's meant to do primarily an collect ECG data of the person who wears it.
Okay.
Either by putting on your finger onto it, so you have a loop around your chest, or by plugging in a USB-C cable, which exposes the ECG leads, and then attaching some probes to your chest. Oh,
it's okay, that happened last time.
Yeah, we also have a DAC network here.
Yeah, exactly. It's a
yeah. Turn off.
See, this is the thing. We don't use DAC phones every day, so.
There goes the battery. Maybe answer and hang up.
Yeah, that's true. Or say hello. It's fine.
Oh. You're on the Amp Hour.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I had to call Chris before his talk so he would remember to turn it off.
Yeah, that was nice.
All right.
I was on stage.
Where were we?
Oh, yeah. What the cardio? So it also has a screen, though.
Yes.
Batteries not built in. It's got kind of like a sandwich topology. Mm-hmm. What are like some of the... So it's running MicroPython, right?
Yeah, so from the software side, we the CPU we use actually has two cores. Mm-hmm. And we have a real-time operating system, a FreeRTOS running on one core, which has also a Bluetooth stack running, so you can connect it to your phone. And on the other core, you can do whatever you want. We have a MicroPython port on there by default, which allows you to write scripts in Python. But you could also write a script in C or Rust or any other language that compiles to bare metal.
Right. That's great. That's great. And what is the what is the processor on there?
That's a Maxim. What's the correct number?
It's a Max 32666.
Oh, nice. Is this what you
intentional
chose
or no?
It came along.
It doesn't hurt. Yeah.
It helped.
Yeah.
I thought someone was joking about that, but oh, okay.
No, it is exactly
nice.
That chip, yes. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a Cortex M4F dual core, 1 MB flash, 0.5 MB RAM, integrated Bluetooth Low Energy, small package, comparatively low power, and yeah, we had access to it.
That's great.
And it looked like a good fit.
So yeah. That's good. Yeah. What was the rough like BOM target for the board? Like so when you start a project like this, were you saying like, oh, we got to hit $20, or €20, we got to hit €10, you know?
From previous projects, we knew that's roughly where we should land. Mm-hmm. And actually, the parts themselves are like maybe 50% of the BOM. Or the whole C-BOM, maybe. But the labor for manufacturing it and all the prototypes and stuff like that also.
Sure. Yeah, you have like a chunk of money, then you have to divvy it.
Yeah. So in the end, we ended up very close to around €20, including
that's
sponsoring everything.
Yeah. And it's got two boards. Oops. The main board has the processor on it, and then the top board is just the display board and some sensors.
That's true.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
There's a lot of sensors.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, there are. Yeah. I kept like going through the API and I was like, oh.
Well, the booklet that came with it, which is also pretty. I love the packaging. Yeah. It was all recyclable, right? Material. Or it was very not plastic. Like the bags that came in.
Paper composites.
And like paper bags, but also it came with a little booklet that just tells you this is this.
That was my only piece of feedback on the badge. Actually, I was so damn confused by how to get it into bootloader mode. I was like, what do I do with this thing? It's not showing up. And then someone's like, look at the diagram again. I'm like, oh! There's like two, so for people listening, it's like it's got four buttons on it, and it was like the top left, the bottom right, you have to hold it at the same time. And there was totally an image there, but it was like an IKEA thing. I was like putting together IKEA furniture. It was like, oh, the Flugenflargen, you know?
So
like
I did, the manual.
Yeah, well.
That's how it is.
Yeah, of course.
That's why we are at camp, and why we have a whole support desk and area, and like support hours and the queuing system.
And there was pop-up badge assembly areas and the hardware hacking because people didn't have the right screwdriver, so somebody put a screwdriver on a table and taped it to the table so you could.
So the badge has, I mean, it's small in quote marks, has very small screws also, and we distributed I think 40 screwdrivers around different villages and told them,
nice.
Okay, keep track of these.
Yeah,
people
right.
will come.
These are a limited
them.
Resource.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
But maybe we can jump back a little bit to what's on there.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you have the CPU, but you have also sensors.
Yeah, we have three sensors on the bottom board, which is a sensor fusion chip, which can do accelerometer, gyroscope, and there is a magnetometer connected as well, mm-hmm. Which means you have the basic orientation yeah. features. And I don't know if anyone actually uploaded an app for it, but you could write a compass for it. Mm. Then there is an environmental sensor, which can do, well, temperature.
It's the BME.
Humidity.
Yeah, that's the pressure, the BME, yeah. And it can do temperature. It can measure the relative humidity, the pressure, uh-huh. air pressure, and then what's that? Gas resistance.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, what?
Was that? I saw that one. Yeah. I didn't know what it was.
Oh. So it has an air quality measurement. And what the...
just reported that it was dusty all weekend, pretty much.
Yeah. it's actually apparently a quite versatile chip, especially this part of it. As far as I understand, it's a wire which gets heated up, and then the resistance is measured. Mm. And depending on the profile which you drive it and the timings, you can measure different chemical properties of the air.
Oh, so like a VOC type sensor where you got like
exactly.
a heating plate,
yes.
and then it's a detector. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And our firmware right now only gives you a gas resistance.
Yeah.
But apparently, I've been told that there are academic papers coming out soon who will be able to show how to detect certain chemicals mm. using this specific technique. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be easy, but I believe it will be possible to, for example, detect ethanol in breath.
Oh, wow.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
That's just great. With this one sensor.
Yes.
Yeah, I work with a couple of VOC sensors right now for a project, and it's they all have hot plates. I know that.
Yeah.
And then it's basically, yeah, what are they picking up off that? And it's
yeah.
it's all implied, though. It's all curves and stuff like that.
Yes. It's a whole lot of chemistry in the end.
Yeah.
And math.
And yeah. math, yeah.
yeah. yeah. That's super cool. And then tons of blinkies, of course. You got to have the...
Yeah, we have a lot of LEDs. And also, we added a side flashlight, so you can... wear it as a wrist-mounted flashlight.
I did not see that one.
I didn't see that either.
Yeah, there was a small hiccup.
what happened there?
So
we love the war
yeah.
stories here. So just
the LED
nobody's
is
listening,
pointing
don't
the
worry.
Wrong way.
Just
it points inwards.
Oh really?
and first I thought, oh, did we get cathode and anode wrong?
Sure.
And we didn't. Well, we looked at the drawing on AliExpress and thought, okay. There's a dent in the LED, the side LED, and that's where the light is coming out. Well, wrong. Light comes out of the other side.
Oh wow!
So now you have to flip it 180 degrees on its head to
yep.
mount
and
it,
then,
and
then
pick and place can't do that.
Yeah, right.
So.
Oh, because then the packaging it would be coming out in that way.
You can solder it by hand,
right.
but you can like the pick and place can't put it.
No, you'd have to
like
re-reel
that.
All the components at that point.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh yeah, yeah, because it's picking it up from that side.
And that was too late and not possible anymore. So. Mm.
Well,
and you said you had some sourcing like timing issues. I remember we were talking.
Yes.
I was asking how you were doing. I think like a month out, and you seemed a little stressed.
Yes.
You seemed a little stressed up until about yesterday. So.
As it happened, we had a main component which was integral to the design late. Mm. Due to factors, I have to say, no one could foresee.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, these things happen.
I mean,
right? yeah.
Specifically, someone died.
Yeah. Oh.
And
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it happens.
Right.
And that created some trouble. So at some point, we were considering sending people over to Asia
and like sorting.
Hand carry things back because UPS wouldn't be fast enough.
Oh, wow.
But. Very last minute, some amazing things happened, things which I'd say are so unlikely that this project should have failed, really, it should have,
yeah.
But made everything work out. So neither a DEF nor the legal department nor a super typhoon nor a broken reflow oven at our manufacturer
oh, wow.
nor anything else could stop us.
That's great.
To basically receive boards in batches during camp so we could give them out as planned just in time.
Yeah.
it was really just in time, like hours between receiving and giving out according to plan.
Yeah. That was not apparent to a consumer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah. And so how many total boards are we talking about here?
We are talking around 5,000 plus.
Wow. Okay.
So there's a few more for spares, and we thought that we'll probably have around 5% defect rate. I'm not actually sure where we are at the moment, really. But I think everyone who wanted one got one.
That's great. And that's, and that was interesting too. So I was talking about this before we started recording, but like someone walked up to the Hardware Hacking Village and said, "Hey, I have my radio badge from 4 years ago. How do I assemble this?" And we were like, "But you guys still have the old badges from 4 years ago."
Very limited amount.
So I mean, I was limited, but like, yeah.
We swapped them for people who have trouble with. If they come to us with a radio badge and they say they have trouble, it indicates that they're using it, and then we're willing to exchange it.
That's
for
why
it
was
working
made.
One,
and
then it comes back to us. We can repair it in Munich as we have time, and then give it out, let's say at Congress or camp again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's true. I guess that's another piece that I'm kind of missing. Like, most people here are going to Congress, right? Or a lot of people here are. And
I'll have to make it out one year.
1 year. We'll see how that goes with family. It's like, I'm going to skip Christmas. We're going to skip Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So let's talk about the firmware a little bit more. So underneath the hood, like, what's going on down there? So you said an RTOS, but what else is...
Yeah, so we have this on the first core. We have the FreeRTOS running, which is the base firmware, which has the Bluetooth stack, which has all the drivers for the different sensors implemented. And this firmware, well, the Core Zero, we call this the Epicardium. It exposes an API, which looks a little bit like syscalls in an operating system. And these can be called from the other core. And yeah, so on the other core, we have this MicroPython port, which allows people to write the Python scripts. And this is our like showcase payload for the other core. We call this the PyCardium. And so I think there are a lot of scripts which have been written at camp for this part.
Yeah.
150 or something.
Right.
It was like
right.
an app store almost.
Oh yeah, you worked with the badge.team folks. That's the the
we can talk about
the Dutch, yeah. That's cool. And so then like on the Core Zero stuff, so the Bluetooth stack, you had to write that from scratch, or you got that from the manufacturer, or what happened there?
Yeah, so actually, the Bluetooth, that's not what I was focusing on, so I guess you know more about that.
Yeah, that comes directly from the CPU manufacturer.
Okay,
it's cool.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to write that from scratch anyways.
I wouldn't want to.
Alvaro does that kind of crap.
Oh, no. No. I stopped trying now.
Yeah.
I mainly focused on integrating it into... FreeRTOS, which wasn't too hard actually.
Yeah. And then so on the low level, like, so talking to the hardware then, I was a little confused at first when I was using it. So I really like the feature you have where it's like the talking mode. Like you can say I want to talk to, or I'm open for communication, or I'm busy, or I'm in camp mode.
And we talked about that at Tor Camp last year.
Did we?
Yeah, like having with a few of us. Like,
Alvaro was saying he wants to like a royalty cut. This week.
No. Because you were talking about, but yeah, like a way of telling that from far away if somebody's up for like random chatting or like please let me be kind of thing.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, so that was an idea that was, I think, pretty early in the whole cardio development cycle, that we want to have this use an LED on the cardio to express your personal state. And there's four states. There is chaos, there is communication, there is camp, and then there is no contact. And those are represented by different blinking patterns. And so chaos stands for adventure mode, and communication stands for open for communication. And camp stands for self-care or camp care.
Like you're busy or you're working or...
Yeah, and well, no contact means please leave me alone.
Fred.
Yeah. And so was that in the RTOS? The reason I'm asking is because I was looking like underneath on the, I expected when I looked at MicroPython to see kind of something that was like blinking this RGB LED green.
Yeah, well, that's happening in the RTOS, so it's okay. Independent of the payload. If you set your personal mode, that's happening via this API, then this LED in the top left corner gets blocked from anything else and is just used to display the personal mode.
Got it, okay. And so how does that then, how does that API present to the MicroPython side of things?
So the API is a C API, and we then wrote wrappers in Python around it to make it prettier to use.
Okay.
Because the base API, well, that's not really Python-y.
Right, okay. That's great. How was it working with RTOS, the free RTOS?
So the free RTOS part was working pretty good. We had more issues with integrating other software into the free RTOS.
Mm. Like what kind of stuff?
Like the drivers?
Yeah.
And none of us had any previous experience with RTOS either.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So you're used to doing like bare metal, and now you have to do like all the
Well, I'm from the other side, like embedded Linux mostly.
Oh, yeah.
And so this was completely new for me to do it with FreeRTOS.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think for everyone in this project, I can say that we learned a very lot of, very many things about a lot of different topics.
Yeah, you see like BME 680s in your dreams now and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was dreaming about things, yes. Yeah.
A lot of the vendor drivers expect like, oh, just fire off an interrupt and like run this thing, but you have the OS to think about now.
Yeah.
Maybe I could mention at this point, I mean, the badge is done in, Cardio is done in KiCad.
Oh, yeah,
and, nice.
It was our very first project in KiCad.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a very sad story about the radio, actually.
Oh.
Because the radio is based on the HackRF, right?
Yeah.
And the HackRF is done in KiCad. But 4 years ago, we were under such incredible stress that we decided we're going to do it in Eagle. And we took the whole schematics from the HackRF, redrawn it in Eagle, did the layout in Eagle, made the badge in Eagle. And then later, people used this as a showcase to import Eagle projects into KiCad. though this time, we initially thought that we'll need a six-layer PCB for our fundamental board, which is the lower board.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't have a license for that anymore. And Eagle, anyways, changed the licensing and blah, blah, blah. So we decided we have to do KiCad and we have to learn it. In the end, it was a four-layer board, but still. And I have to say, it was great. It was a great experience.
Awesome.
I can highly recommend people to start designing in KiCad now. So that's what I learned. And all the HDI PCB design and everything, that was...
Yeah.
Oh, do you have, like, blind...
Yeah, BS microbias.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How those work
blocked
out?
Blocked microbias. Okay.
Just for getting out of, was it a BGA package?
Yeah, we have 0.4 millimeter BGAs on there. And you need to use microvias at that point, plugged ones.
Yeah, otherwise you can only use the outside pins, right?
Like, yeah.
Hmm.
So manufacturing was okay on PCBs? And I did notice the PCBs, there was different colors.
Yes.
So is that on purpose?
Yes.
Oh, what was it? What was the? Well, I mean, like, I had a top board that was purple, and someone else had green, and someone else had whatever, so...
So, actually, we had polled people what color their badge will have had, and, we decided on a final set of colors, and then gave those out at random.
Okay, alright. So it was just to mix things up, and...
Yeah, and also the wristbands are random,
totally random
colors as
well. Yeah, I noticed that, too.
So... This is not, the colors are not there to put people into different classes.
Mm-hmm.
They are there to have colors and have people talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was actually one of my main goals like last year. I want to have a badge which makes people interact with each other and talk to each other.
Yeah.
But then the ECG came along and we somehow humbled that into there.
Why not both?
Yes, exactly. And the colors are one part of that. Because it makes people talk about the colors and what they like, what they don't like, and if they maybe people can exchange colors and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got to catch them all.
Well, you can't this time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many combinations there are.
Yeah.
Quite a few.
Yeah, that's good though. Was that hard for manufacturing then, for tracking and?
Not at all.
Oh no. Okay. No. Okay. Yeah, I like that idea. So we just got back from DEF CON too. DEF CON. You probably were too busy to go to DEF CON, I'm guessing, right?
I was at DEF CON 9 years ago.
9 years ago. Okay. So DEF CON this year was very like social focused too. I really like that idea, and I think that that's a really good use case for badges, of like trying to get people to interact with one another. It's tough though, right? To get, like, even if you set your mode, your personal state, right? It's not necessarily that people are going to come up to you and do that kind of thing.
Well, I tried talking to people who had the communication mode on as often as possible.
That's good.
But yeah, I think there was one game that was implemented which people really liked, but I never got to play it, but that made people interact with the cardio quite
a bit.
What
was it?
I'm not sure.
Was it on the that badge.team thing?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. So what is badge.team and how did it work with your badge?
So we had thought about doing this for quite a long time, but the actual integration happened really last minute. Mm-hmm. So they have what they call the Hatchery, which is a repository of apps, and that's where people can upload their scripts and others can download it. And on the other badges they maintain, they have the App Store on the device.
I didn't know that.
For example, they have a badge that's based on an ESP32, I believe, mm-hmm. And that can connect via Wi-Fi to the Hatchery and download apps. Mm. And for the cardio, we can't do that because we only have Bluetooth. So what we did is we had some people write an app for Android and iOS, which can displays the list of apps and allows you to select one to download it and then transfer it via Bluetooth onto the badge and allows you to get scripts that way.
Yeah, try new things and see what other people did.
Yeah, it was a tough decision between Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, mm-hmm. really.
Power.
Yeah.
Power is a main factor here, yes. We have a 200 milliamp hour battery in here, mm-hmm. And if you want to have this thing running also with a display for quite some time, then Wi-Fi might not be the best option, especially if you want to use the phone and also. So Bluetooth seemed to be an attractive option. And then at some point we realized, yeah, so we can use a phone and actually, basically, it's not quite a tunnel, but patch it to the internet via your mm-hmm. phone. Which also has the advantage that you don't have to book it into whatever random Wi-Fi network is around. Because your phone probably already has an internet connection.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, so it's more like a tether then.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's pretty simple. We have a very, very basic file transfer protocol, which allows you to take the files from the internet, put it on the badge, and then they appear in the menu on the badge.
Great.
Yeah, I think the badge.team folks, I guess they had an area, mm-hmm. and Drew Fustini from Osh Park brought the open source hardware badge,
yeah.
convention badge from a while back, and now badge.team or it works on
right.
the open source hardware
because it has the 32 on it,
yeah.
as well. I think that's the easier way to integrate it, but that thing,
but he just walked over and they ported it in a few hours,
yeah.
which is really neat.
That's great.
Yes, we had really good cooperation with the badge team,
yeah.
really helpful. They came over, helped us basically adapt our MicroPython infrastructure to their egg format that they have. It's Python eggs, right?
Oh yes.
They did the list so that works and all the stuff, and added a cardio category to the website and added a few features we needed for people to work with this stuff. It was really nice working with them.
Yes, that's great. And I mean, that's such a huge, so now that I've hung around with Badge Life folks for a while and tried a little bit of myself, it's like that's the big, I mean, obviously there's all the hardware stuff, but like you get through this huge hardware slog and then you're like, oh yeah.
It doesn't do anything.
You gotta make this thing interesting now. You know, it's not, people aren't as interested just in the hardware as in what it does then, you know. So how did you try and get any feedback early on for the software, for the firmware and stuff?
Well, the firmware isn't quite done yet, as is probably usual with any of these devices. And so there's quite a few things the hardware can do which we can't yet expose to the script side
Any previews here? What do we got?
Yeah, for example, this is actually working on, being worked on right now, which is we have this sensor on top here, which can measure blood oxygen.
Oh.
And just randomly at camp, I met someone who wrote a paper about a very similar chip. And now he's porting his library to the cardio.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so are people contributing on the RTOS side as well? Is it possible to contribute to that?
So we have people contributing on absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So it's starting from the just writing apps to people who see specific things they want to do in their app, see that's not yet possible, and telling us, please implement this. And we also have people who implemented huge features on their own and send us a merge request. And mm-hmm. yeah, we tried to get as many of those merged as quickly as possible, but
right.
yeah.
Well, like, what's an example of one of the things that got merged?
Recently? Well, actually, I don't have an overview right now because
the BME 680 sensor.
Yeah, for example, that was day minus one, I believe.
Maybe, yes.
Yeah.
So really close before camp, we were all in a rush because we wanted to get as many things working as possible. And then someone showed up and had an implementation for this. And
frame buffers.
Yeah, also that was a really nice one. Yeah, we had a guy who just decided to write a frame buffer implementation for us and get that working.
I think development had an exponential curve.
Yeah.
Which had its, I guess its knee maybe at the beginning of camp.
Yeah, once people got a hold of them.
Right. The amount of merge requests coming in on our GitLab server, it's just skyrocketed. At that point, yeah.
Hopefully it keeps going. Yeah.
Mostly from these IP out.
Yeah, right. So for the first 2 days, I think you and me, we were both just busy getting through this huge backlog of things that got in and trying to get all of that working together. And mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can't just throw them in then. You got to actually test them out.
Yeah, we were really, really busy in the beginning. And now we got a lot of things working. And so it's a bit more relaxed now. But yeah.
That's good. So then on the we saw the programming jig you have. It was like a black magic probe going through the USB-C. Is that right? Is that secret? Sorry.
No.
That look, I was like, oh no.
When we designed the thing, we thought, okay, we need some kind of connector
to program these, right?
And because there's no bootloader on there, and we wanted to have a USB bootloader. Mm-hmm. And the easiest way we could think of was, okay, we'll get a USB-C connector and put
20 pins per side, right, or whatever it is.
I think it's 12 per side.
Yeah, yeah.
20 plus. Yeah. Yeah.
You can't just quite use all of them.
Yeah.
But SWD, just SWD without the reset line, it works just fine on USB-C. And so the only thing you have to do is you plug in a adapter board we have with a USB-C plug, mm-hmm. I guess. Which has, in our case, already an SWD debugger on there, which we got sponsored by someone. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so no soldering required. You just plug it in. You get a connection via OpenOCD to the batch.
Yeah, I was just wondering how people were submitting patches for the RTOS side of things. That's why I was asking about that.
Oh, so I'm sorry. You don't actually need the debugger to work on the firmware. I think a lot of people who send pull requests weren't actually using debuggers. They just wrote the patches, and if things didn't quite work, used printf debugging, and that works quite well.
So how were they uploading? So they were
bootloader, the USB.
The better question is, what is that mechanism that's uploading the new code to the?
Sorry,
yeah,
we have a very basic bootloader, which it has the ability to expose the flash storage as a mass storage device, uh-huh. and you can boot into that bootloader mode, mm-hmm. then put a firmware file on there, and if you then reboot the batch, then it will save that to the internal flash storage and thus update the
firmware. Got it. So basically someone was compiling the code down to binary, uploading that over that mass storage, and then it recognizes, hey, there's a new file here, I'm going to try this out.
Yeah.
And sometimes it might break, but who cares, right?
Yeah, so the bootloader is quite robust. If you upload a broken firmware, or if the flashing process fails in the middle, you can just reboot and try again.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's a really good thinking for how you get people involved without needing extra hardware.
Yes.
Because, like, on the DEF CON badge, it was like you needed the pin,
pogo pin, the tag connect, which is expensive and hard to get.
Right. So thinking about what is the least amount of hardware you need to get something done.
Well, the USB and Python, like the whole Python thing, everybody was playing with their like code on their badge, because you just need a text. Chicago Joe, the juggler, he used his Android phone to reprogram his badge over USB-C.
I heard about that.
Yeah, he didn't have a laptop, and then he used a text editor on Android, and then mass storage.
That's a lot of slow typing.
I met him the first time at KeyCon. KeyCon, right?
Well, we're in Europe. Here. It's fine.
And I met him again here.
We
talked, and then he said, yeah, I've implemented a continuity tester on my badge, because I was at the hardware hacking area and someone asked for a continuity tester, and I said, I don't have one, but I can make one within 20 minutes. Wrote the Python code on his
phone.
On his phone, plugged in a USB-C to USB-C connector, transferred the file over to the badge, and there it is.
That's magical.
This is the future we're living in. This is actually the positive side of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, writing code on a phone is tough, but I think.
But you can.
But
you
can.
Have to.
Right. When in a pinch, that's pretty great. So what else is on there that we don't know about yet? What's hidden under the hood?
It's a motor, right?
That's a vibration motor.
Oh, yeah, there is. Also, we have the ECG leads. Also exposed on the USB-C connector, so you actually have that on right now.
How's your heart rate, Ben? Are you nervous about being on the amp hour?
A little bit, actually, yes.
Yeah. So what's the display set? I actually haven't got
I don't have a heartbeat like rate yet, but you can see the... I have a beat detection, at least. The LED blinks every time my heart beats.
The amp hour took his heartbeat away.
He killed
So, yeah, you have a rather nice ECG on my display right now.
And this is using the USB-C, or is it using the leads below?
This is using, so you can't see that.
You gotta take your shirt off.
At your devices, but I've got some ECG leads attached to my chest, and they run around next to my arm into my badge, and I've got a working ECG right now.
EEG, right?
You get muscles also.
So like winking and stuff like that, right?
Yes, you can see eye movement or muscle movement in your arms and stuff like that.
So what is that chip? Is it mostly just like an instrumentation amplifier with a current driver?
It's a differential amplifier with a very large common mode rejection with integrated ADC.
Okay.
So
like an all-in-one front-end
kind of
chip?
Yeah,
exactly. That's great.
It's an AFE for ECG in the end.
Any problems getting the signal through putting it through a USB cable versus just a direct
lead?
Actually
not. It surprisingly just worked. We had like big fears about noise and everything, but specifically if you have the leads attached, it's fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the end, really, you have like a meter long of cable attached to it, right? So how bad can it be?
Yeah, either way, it's gonna be dealing with that normally, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so this mode I've got it running in right now was my main driver for this project, really. I wanted to have something where people can put this on, go to bed, sleep for a few hours, and have a long, like a few hours of ECG data, either stream to their phone or save to their cardio. Like that was the one thing I wanted to achieve. I achieved that 2 days ago, together with someone else, like at camp, and at that point I was like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. Like now it's time for a beer.
Now it's time to enjoy camp.
Yeah.
But there's much more you can do, specifically also with the optical sensor on the top. Mm-hmm. So, for example, what you can do is you measure the heartbeat electrically, and then you measure when the wave appears at the fingertip. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a delay, and that delay is correlating with your blood pressure, which would be, you have to calibrate it every now and then, but apparently only every few weeks.
Oh, wow.
We'll see if we can get this running or not.
Yeah, I've heard about research for this like many years ago, but yeah. I didn't know that's good enough to try. That's pretty cool.
There's even a second ECG on there.
Really?
Yes.
Hidden?
Well, it...
It's
open source.
Yeah, it says in the schematics and everything.
Well, I've actually looked at the schematics yet.
There's the optical sensor also has an ECG channel. It's only going to two pads at the moment, but you can hook up a second pair of leads and do another channel.
Mm. Like the two pads next to the optical sensor.
Exactly,
also.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they have. You can see the waveform on the pad, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm. That was funny because the PCB manufacturer said, hey, should we remove that? And it's basically, no, don't. That's
that looks like
right
an artifact.
There.
Yeah.
No, this is PCB art.
Yeah. That's great.
Yes. And I see there's a 3D printed.
Yeah, so people have been building cases for the cardio, and it's been really great to see what.
At camp.
Yeah, at camp. And it's great to see the different designs pop up. So there were people who laser cut acrylic, and this one's 3D printed. And
nice.
And then there's a really easy way, cutting plastic bottles open and just using like a sheet of.
Oh, for protection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
People were coming up with things which you can't come up with that stuff. Only people at camp can.
A plastic
come up with
bottle,
that stuff.
Screen protector,
yeah. That's great. And it's just for covering the screen then? Or
well,
yeah.
The whole. I didn't realize there's a protector on the picture. I was trying to figure out what's going on. And then, yeah, there's just clear plastic going from. They just screwed it down, I guess, right?
Exactly, yeah. Huh. Yeah, we designed the whole stack up in a way that you can basically screw it into a case.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
not that too hard to do that.
Right. You just reverse the, or you get like a long screw going into like a screw box.
Exactly,
or something.
Yes.
Yeah,
but I like the case because it's, if you run into something, you're not going to worry about ripping off a component or something.
Yeah, right.
And then there's something we haven't mentioned yet, and that is the edge of our base PCB, which has suitable connectors.
As what?
You can, so we specifically chose
the... Oh, so like you can sew into it?
Yes. And we specifically chose the band to be very thick. It has a neoprene core, and you can put conductive thread through it without going through the whole thing. So you can put the thread through the fabric.
But not below.
But without touching your skin below, so you can put on additional electronics onto the band.
Yeah. That's great.
And
we
had workshops running for that.
Yeah.
Really well received. Mm-hmm. Of course, at camp, people mainly putting on LEDs and stuff.
Sure.
But at some point, someone mentioned to me, like, why don't you take a small U-Blox GPS module and sew it on? And, well, why didn't I get this idea before?
Yeah.
Because then it's like perfect navigation device with a compass, with GPS and everything. Yeah,
and then you get a decent battery, so... Last for a hike for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I've only charged mine like when I got it, and it's been. It was definitely on all night because I woke up and it was looking at me.
Yep. So what else should we know about the badge? I mean, is there anything you wish you would have done differently?
Started earlier.
Well, that's a constant in life.
Yes, it is. Yeah, there's maybe one thing: more prototypes. Not more prototype runs.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically more pieces during the first prototype run. We did 20 pieces and distributed them across Germany so people can start playing with them. We should have done like 40 or 60 or something like that.
Just get them in more hands, more people writing code, stuff
exactly,
like that.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, there's always that fall off. You know, it's like, best of intentions, send someone a badge, that board to check out, right? And if it's like not their main thing, it's just not going to get used as much.
Yes.
And so you do have to kind of spray the whole crowd and then hope that a couple pick it up.
So that's one thing. Let me look at this thing. What else?
There's SAO connector I found out.
It also has a small quirk. So there's a shitty add-on connector. You can beep that out if you want to.
That's okay.
And it's the latest revision with the 6 pins. The only thing is that you have to solder it in a little bit at an angle so the USB-C connector still
fits. A little bit at an angle.
Or cut the USB connector plastic.
That exposes I2C and two GPIOs and the 3.3 volts.
Mm-hmm.
Switchable, actually. So
switchable.
So there's a power management chip on there. It has two 3.3 volt rails.
Oh, nice.
And one of them goes to our harmonic board, which is the upper board, and you can totally switch it off so that there's no leakage and stuff like that for low power standby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe a fun side story from development. So the SWD line, which is exposed by a USB, is only for the core zero, so you can't access the other core. And when we implemented this dual core stuff, we were hitting quite a lot of trouble because it's hard to know what the other core is doing if you can't access the register file. And so, I don't know, I think you found out or someone told you that by pure coincidence, the I2C pins on the shitty add-on correspond to the SWD line 2 for the other core.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So that's it was a feature.
Yeah.
Well, an SAO connector that actually debugs.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It is.
That's not shitty at all.
Yeah, right. Not shitty enough.
And to be quite honest, without this, we probably wouldn't have gotten it stable enough.
When you said dual core, I was like, that's not easy to get.
We had so many issues with that, but it's working adequately stable now, I think.
And that you mentioned syscall-like API, is that just shared memory?
So there is no memory mapping in this chip, so we have just one big block of RAM, and we have allocated a section of that for this cross-core communication.
Okay, they can just whenever read, write. Okay.
So I think in retrospect, I would have designed that a little bit different, but you learn the things as you do them, and
it works, right?
Yeah,
we'll have to see. I guess at some point we'll have to think about cleaning up the software, and then you immediately get into the thing where you say, okay, now we've got a lot of eggs on the hatchery, which should stay compatible.
Yeah,
and you can't break support for them, otherwise people are going to be, not happy.
We need to do a regression testing, but have a wall of the cardio badges.
With different firmware versions.
Yeah, right.
So for me, this is very important that the API we exposed via this cross-core stays stable. So anything compiled in the past will still run in the future. So if you have if you have hacked up a little loadable in C at camp, I want that to still work in the future. And I'll try to keep support as close as possible.
That's great.
And then I guess if you abstracted it well, you can change out the guts from underneath, and then the interface is still the same, right?
So it's just a library you link against in your loadable, and that is enough to access.
Really, anything which can link against the C library and produce ARM Cortex code will work. Mm.
So we had some people actually work on a Rust support library for the cardio, and they did a workshop, and I think it was quite well received.
I think the embedded folks here, man.
They love Rust.
Yeah, they love it. Yeah.
We love Rust too.
Yeah.
It's very memory safe.
So actually, I'm playing around with embedded Rust a little, and doing this in C, this whole firmware, we ran into so many issues that just don't exist in Rust. And
memory.
Yeah, for example, we have so many troubles with locking the peripherals correctly, and those are just things that in Rust you can't do them wrong because the compiler doesn't let
you. Is this stable enough now that, in a year, if you try to recompile, it's still going to work?
You mean Rust?
Yeah.
Yeah, so since the 1.0 release of Rust, they have stability.
Okay.
And they also introduced some addition sort of thing that code that worked with an older version of Rust still can be compiled with the new Rust compiler.
Yeah, that was what scared me before. It's a developing language.
Yeah, right.
Before 1.0...
Yeah, we just took that word out. We don't use that anymore, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, before 1.0, you had to fix your code every day once you download the new compiler.
Wow.
I've got one more thing which I would have done differently.
Okay.
Don't use 0201 components unless you have to.
What did you use them for?
Everything.
Oh.
Almost.
Yeah. That hurt your assembly or what?
It limits your choice of manufacturers. Mm. In fact, we had we got quotes, and some people just said, yeah, we'd like to do it, but we can't do 02, 01. Right. And,
not at a level they would be willing to make money.
Well, you'd have a yield loss. Yeah.
Yeah, and it gets tough at this size. 04, 02, no problem.
Would you have had room if you did 04, 02, you think?
So on the harmonic board, I think we could have done 04, 02, but we just chose to continue with 02, 01 as we did on the fundamental board. And that, in retrospect, I think was not a good idea. Mm. It worked out well.
Sure.
It limited our options at some point.
Okay. Yeah, that's good information, I think, is like, you know, kind of like, I always think about the temperature of the industry and stuff like that, too. Of like, what is the practice? Of course, you can get, you know, what's the one below
1005?
What's the one below that, though?
005,
01025, whatever. There's one below that.
Well, you're talking imperial there because metric's different too.
Whatever. Yeah, but like there is that's super, super, super tiny, and it's like you can do that. You know, Apple does that, right?
Yeah, people like three do that. Fabs can probably.
Right,
do
exactly,
that,
and then you just start to narrow your production capabilities.
Yes. So I mean, we only do 5,000 plus boards, right? And
so you probably can't even get to the places that can do those, right?
Like the contract manufacturers interested in that stuff might not be the ones who do 01005s. Mm-hmm. So,
Okay.
Otherwise, I have to say that, for example, all the BGA stuff worked out really nicely, no problem whatsoever. Mm-hmm. There's one QFN component which gave us a little bit of trouble, but not too much. And overall, I have to say that worked out much better than anticipated, like all the small pitch stuff and everything.
Yeah.
Kaike had a question. Did you make all your own footprints or did you use the footprint library?
All over the place. Yeah. So we made a lot of our own footprints. We picked some from other projects. Many manufacturers by now have footprint generators or at least expose some weird website or whatever.
Yeah.
And they all output KiCad.
Like SnapEDA, export
KiCad.
Double
check all of them still. As a PSA, everyone, I'm sure you did. Check your footprints when someone makes it for you. You know, like that's.
Was there something where footprint was wrong?
There was, but I don't remember.
Yeah, there was one chip, but in the end we swapped it out anyways because we didn't use it for the. So we did one revision for the fundamental board and two revisions for the harmonic board.
That's all. That's great.
That's all. Yes, and for the fundamental board we switched a QFN component into a BGA component because the BGA was giving us one additional feature. Oh yeah, there's something. Bioimpedance measurement. we can also do that, at least in hardware. We
have what does that mean?
You can measure skin resistance, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And that was only available in the BGA package. But I basically just said, we have that 0.4 BGA up there, and it just worked. We'll make that 0.5 BGA working without actually testing it.
It works. That's great.
Is this using the same two pads on the top?
Yeah, it's the ECG chip. In the end, the main ECG chip can
It just has another feature, you're saying?
Yes, but only in the BGA package.
Yeah, right. That's great. But it's crazy what you just get from chips these days.
Well, and then the medical ones are so integrated that they do everything.
We at some point, so the chips were so late, and it was a BGA, that we started considering putting them on by hand, at camp. And we started practicing. So. We took an empty panel, got a solder stencil, and put on lead-free solder paste, reflowed it once, cleaned it, put on some flux, put the component on, because that's how we would have gotten it right from the factory
they would have some.
Imagine like you do the PCB, but this one component is missing, and populate it anyways, and then you just put on the chips and we just put it onto a hot plate, waited until they melted and lined up and took it off. It's a 0.65 millimeter BGA with a few hundred pins, and we got 5 out of 6 working.
Wow.
Confirmed by X-ray.
Wow,
that's a big part.
Did you have X-ray here?
Not at camp. So we practiced back in Munich.
I wouldn't put it,
I'm sure somebody has one. Yeah, I've seen some scarier things.
People would have tried it, for sure. Yeah. And we tried back in Munich. We prepared ourselves and we took time measurements, how long it would take us and how many hot plates we would need and and all of these things. And the one thing I learned from it was like, don't be scared of BGAs, but maybe I'm
I prefer them to QFNs, to be honest. Yeah. Like,
you get more pins, you get more breakouts.
I think they're easier to hand solder than QFNs because the balls just line up. Yeah. With paste and or just flux. Yeah. I haven't done the huge ones, but the, you know, tens of pins.
In fact, now that I think about it, I first tried, like, before doing that on a panel of the cardio, I tried on a radio. So I pulled a working radio, took off the CPU, cleaned the thing up, put on some solder, and then put a new CPU on back on and checked if it's working. And yeah, it was working. So
yeah.
Okay, we can maybe try this.
Yeah.
It's feasible.
Yeah.
So that's good. A good way to wrap up probably is like, so the radio kind of had a life past its prime, past the, you know, the conference itself. How do you think it's going to work going with taking this project and making it continue to be useful and keeping developing it?
I think that mainly depends on the users.
Yeah.
Maybe you have something to say.
Yeah, well, we'll continue to support the software and extend it. And as mentioned before, the hardware has a lot of features that we aren't using to the full extent yet. And I think if we can make those available, we can keep people interested. And I hope to see new things pop up, see people try out to use the data from the different sensors to get even more information.
I can imagine like an example application where you basically just leave it at home and it goes into a super low power state, uses the environmental sensor to measure air quality, and when you're home and your phone syncs, so maybe you have Raspberry Pi, syncs via BLE, and well, at least you have something at home, and which does something at least.
Yeah,
it's
right.
not wasted.
Oh, I want to use it. If that environmental sensor works, I'm going to start using it in my weather stations. Because having the air quality would be pretty nice too. And now I have a development board for it. So.
Right, right. That's great. Where can people find out more about the badge and about you guys online?
So our domain name is card10.badge.events.ccc.de.
It's pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
Did you get that tattooed on your arm? You know?
it's written on the underside of the badge for those who have one.
Oh, good.
And, well, there is a wiki with documentation, and we also have extensive documentation of the firmware and the API. Yeah, and also the hardware, so it's all available. And if you want to design your own harmonic board, which is the top board, you can totally do that, for example.
Yes, we were expecting people to potentially build their own harmonic boards. Like, there's a easy to get board-to-board connector there, and you don't need much support circuitry.
Oh.
It exposes I2C lines at different voltages, SPI. You basically have to plug in the battery through that connector.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't be too hard to build another harmonic board with a different sensor, different display, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect that we will see something like that at Congress in half a year.
Nice.
That's great. Yeah, that's the right amount of time for it. Where can people find you online if they're looking to...
If you want to be found.
Well, me specifically on Twitter, I think.
Yeah, well, I guess we have an IRC channel where we are all reachable.
Okay.
You can put something in the show notes, I guess.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for sitting down and chatting with us.
You're welcome.
Great job on the back. Thanks.